to the College of Creation. My name's Dan.
And my name is Michael.
We are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to homebrew items, rules, creatures, and features for D&D. This show here is just about us challenging each other, our listeners challenging us, and generally us encouraging our listeners, each other, everyone else, to be creative. Make a D&D experience that is completely unique to you and your table. We will talk here about what makes for good homebrew, discuss various opinions on game design, and we will try to surprise and delight each other with all manner of creations. Sound good to you, Michael?
That sounds excellent.
Before we get into all of that stuff, Michael, I do have a couple of questions for you, just so we can set the stage.
Lovely.
How we operate, what the things that we do. The first one is more of an icebreaker. What is your favorite house rule?
A favorite house rule that I use or that I've created?
That you use on a regular basis. You know, this can be something that you came up with, or it can be something that you've seen used elsewhere that you've incorporated at your tables, and now you never go into a game without it.
I have a rule that I'm sure many other DMs have implemented or created a variation of, but I call it skill check fatigue. And essentially it is a mechanic that is created to deal with repetitive skill checks. So if a player wants to check for something, we'll say the party monk tries to jump over a chasm. Or try and climb up a wall or something, and they make an acrobatics check. If they fail that acrobatics check, and then they try it again in the same manner, the DC increases. So anytime you try a check the same way, you increase the DC and kind of fatigue on the check. And I've found that it dissuades characters from beating their head against the wall and trying things the same way, and really encourages creativity in using skills that they normally wouldn't utilize. So they try and jump across the canyon or whatever. They can't use athletics, they can't use acrobatics. Instead, they make a nature check to try and see what kind of rock it is, to try and climb it instead.
Sure,
To utilize different things that their character wouldn't normally think of. And I like it very much. It's worked very well for me.
That's a really interesting way to tackle that problem of that I know so many DMs and GMs have run into of a party member will try to do something and then either somebody else will try and do the exact same thing, or they'll just, you know, say, oh, I failed that time. Can I try it again? And, you know, if there's not a relevant consequence in the moment, it's like, I mean, I guess, but like,
I have had a little bit of pushback, not from any players of mine, but just, you know, commenters on TikTok or, you know, discussions on Discord where people will say that's kind of a breach of autonomy. And I think maybe if misused, it could be, but I'm very clear at the outset, you can use any check that you want. If you'd like to keep using acrobatics, absolutely go for it. But we're going into the situation knowing that it's going to get harder and harder if you try and continue down the same path.
Right. And I think it is good to also go in with that assumption that the rule isn't there to prevent you from being able to do the thing, but is trying to encourage you to do it a different way, to play against type, maybe, in a way that creates interesting stories and interesting moments. It doesn't stop you from doing the thing, but it does create a situation where if you fail, you might consider going about it a different way. And it plays into it plays into the idea that the world isn't set, that the solution to a problem in D&D and other TTRPGs should never be one thing. There should be multiple ways to approach a problem.
It's a good way to incrementalize the concept of freedom of choice, but not freedom from consequence, where you can actively choose to do whatever you want, but you're manipulating the world. And if you fail at something, sometimes things break. And it's been really good for the table that I'm DMing for right now. I've never seen so many medicine checks. place. Whereas, you know, perception and investigation are typically king. After a couple fails, they're like, how do I even help this person? Like, how do I assess this person can't talk? How do I try and do this? I don't know. Make him medicine check. Make a history check.
But, I was just gonna say history check could be really interesting and provide you with different information.
You need to know what's going on with the wildlife. Make an animal handling check. That never happens, and it's just it's been so good to see players really reach outside of their wheelhouse. Do you have a favorite house rule?
Yeah, my favorite house rule. I mean, I usually run with harsh super swingy crits, which are super fun. I think my favorite house rule that I've started to implement in D&D specifically, and that I probably will just always use moving forward, is party inspiration. I, as a DM, am really bad at remembering in the moment to grant inspiration. I'm so focused on responding to everything that's going on that I don't necessarily always recognize those moments. And I really want to let those moments get recognized. So I have started to do a thing where I'm putting the responsibility of granting ownership onto the players.
That's amazing.
This is super fun. There are a bunch of ways to do it that I have read about and seen. The way I've started to do it is there are three inspiration tokens per session. Any player in any moment can see someone else do something cool and propose, I think that deserves inspiration. And if there's general consensus, then that inspiration token goes to that player. Now, the one caveat I have to it is that it's got to be granted in the moment, not retroactively. So you can't get to a situation where it's like, oh, this person is in a tough spot and they really could use inspiration for this role. Can I grant them inspiration for this thing they did a while ago? Like, I want it to be a tool where the players see something cool happen or you know, they want to recognize each other in the moment for making a cool choice, doing a cool role play moment.
There has to be some element of responsibility.
And just a matter of you know, we want to recognize those things in the moment when they happen so that it encourages everybody else to take those big swings, you know? Because I love big swings at the table. That's the kind of thing that really bonds a group together as well, is them recognizing each other's positive contributions to the story, to the world, to whatever it is. Even if that's you know, I've had it given out for moments of inter-party conflict. It's the sort of thing where two players might be just really deeply in the role play of their characters, and their characters are butting heads in that
love
moment.
That.
But there's a recognition of this was good for the story, this was good for the moment, this fit into the immersion. So one of the players in that scene might grant inspiration to the other one and say, that was great. That, really pushed me and my role play further.
Yeah, that kind of brings up the quasi-issue. Won't that just, you know, inspire your players to just always try and do things to get inspiration? It's
Yeah.
That's the point. Absolutely. That's the good issue that I want, is players always, you know, reaching further into their character and you know, trying to do cool stuff. When you were a kid on the playground and you just wanted to do the coolest thing to impress your friends and everybody's like, oh yeah, that's so cool. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
You're playing a game with your friends, and now we're adults and we can handle more adult things. And that just makes me want to be better. That makes me want to show off for my friends.
I also think that if the DM is the only one giving out inspiration, then it will necessarily mean that all instances of inspiration are given out for a similar set of things. The things that impress me as a DM are going to be different than things that each player is impressed by or is interested in from other players at the table. So instead of only having to impress one person and go for one thing that you know is going to land with this person, you've got a bunch of other people that you're everybody likes a little bit of a different thing and feels that's a cool thing that you're doing.
It's so totally it's a glimpse into, you know, a player's mindset and how they view the game and how they view the party dynamic, which is really fun.
Yes.
Because I recently have started using it, just a couple weeks ago, actually. But what I have found most beneficial is just the kind of the low-key help that I get as a GM learning what my players want. Because it's such a tough thing to outright ask players. And I'm very, very lucky with an incredibly generous table. All of them are very open to critique and critiquing me. It's always a very positive environment. But one thing that I know that I am bad at, and several of my players are not very good at either, is just answering a blatant question about what they want from the game. Because it's such a vast question. It's almost unanswerable in a number of words, you know. So when you have this inspiration mechanic where they can point out something in the moment when they get excited about it, I got to take that note, right? What gets them excited? What did another player do that they were like, oh man, that is good enough that I want to award this other player with a bonus, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing is that, like, you're right. It's so hard to get a straight answer out of players when you ask them what they like or what they want out of the game, because a lot of people don't know how to express it in words, but they know it when they're playing the game. They know what they like and gravitate towards, but it's very instinctual. It's very they'll just react to what's interesting to them. Mm-hmm.
And that's the most genuine thing you can get from them too.
Mm-hmm. That's question number one. That was very long-winded, and I think we got into a lot, but it's super fun.
We sure did.
Second question is really the meat of the reason why we're here, though, because we're not necessarily talking just exclusively about house rules and that sort of thing here. We're mostly talking about is homebrew, which is magic items, subclasses, classes, new races, new feats, all kinds of things. The question really is, why? Why do we like homebrew so much? Why do we feel homebrew is necessary? Do we feel it's necessary, or do we feel that it's just fun? Because I think I have a lot of thoughts on why I do what I do, but I'd love to hear from you. Why do you homebrew?
In my opinion, and this is absolutely subjective, it is for how my brain operates while I'm playing D&D and while I'm crafting D&D, building storylines, running games, things like that. I don't homebrew because I do homebrew because I like it and I want to, but for me it is more of a necessity. The kind of golden rule of starting to DM is, you know, you pick a module and you run a one shot and you kind of get your feet wet and you do things that's already structured. And for the way that I think, I find that incredibly arduous. I think that is really, really difficult to take something that's already complete and kind of just run my players through it. I am a very fluid thinker, and the moment that something goes outside of those bounds, I'm going to want to chase that instead of trying to get my players back on track. So when I first started my first campaign that I ran, I said, okay, I'm going to do this module. I'm going to make sure that everything is in place. I'm going to have everything prepared for this concrete storyline. And I got maybe one or two pages in, and I said, this is so boring to me. What? Why did somebody write this out? And I know why they did. I know that there are people that love that type of thing. I just can't follow it. And so I scrapped it all, and I went and I rolled some dice on a table, and I traced them, and that was the world map for what now is the world that I run all of my games in. And I just started making random dots. Those all became cities. And I gave all of my players a city that they started in, and they helped me build everything out. And at that point, I knew that I was going to be a predominantly homebrew DM. And that, you know, has blossomed into a little bit of everything else. I make subclasses for my players when they want to branch out from where they thought their characters were going, but they, you know, the story takes them in a different way. I make custom items for their characters. We work together to create NPCs that fit into their storyline. Just anything that makes a more comfortable and creative and inclusive environment to play at my table, that's what I'm going to do. And that's what keeps me interested and excited to keep making homebrew.
I love that. I agree 1,000%. I think that it's a thing for me where it's about customizing it for my table. It's about creating mm-hmm. an experience that is truly unique to that group. So they'll have magic items that only exist in that world, in that story, for that character. I think there are DMs out there, and I think those DMs are certainly not wrong to say that they can just reflavor that. You know, some people can reskin anything and make it work, and they love that, and I respect it. I need to go further than that personally. What I'm looking for aesthetic.
I think reflavoring can work if there's something that exists that you really like. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done that plenty of times where I already have a subclass that I really enjoy, or an item that I'm just, you know, really connected to, or whatever the mechanic may be, where I really like how it works, and that is when I'll reflavor. But I mean, for anybody, there aren't going to be that many of those things that you truly like can't separate from how everything completely works together. And homebrew is the perfect solution to that.
Yeah. I think it's mostly just really fun, and mostly just like it allows my brain to think about game design. It allows my brain to think about how these things interact in the world. Sometimes it's a matter of I feel like something is missing in the core rule set. But sometimes it's just the thought of like, I think this would be a cool idea. It doesn't need to be there. Is there something completely wrong with the system that like this one tiny little magic item that I think would be cool doesn't exist in? No. I think that would be a cool thing to exist. So I'm going to make it exist. I think sometimes 5e especially gets a lot of flack from DMs who have played in other systems and see that 5e needs a lot of homebrew to work right. And I don't deny that there's a little more work on the part of the DM in 5e than maybe there was in other systems that have like a really robust tool set and a really robust rule set for the DM. But I also think that like I like the freedom that 5e gives me to homebrew.
5e, for what it is, I think that it's a really good system, especially for right-brained people, to leave the holes in the right places. And like you said, there are things that, on a mechanical level, could and should be looked at. I'm not sure which of those holes are going to be filled this year with the new DM's guide and the new rule set that's supposed to be dropped later. But, you know, I hope that it's not all of them, you know? Because those are the things that you can present to yourself, not as a problem, but as an opportunity to be creative, especially as an opportunity to be creative with your players. If they're the ones that find the holes in the game, you can say, okay, how would you fix this? Or how would your character fix this? Like, where in the narrative would your character find a solution for this absence of a rule, whatever the rule may be? And that's the type of thing that I love about homebrew, is like, you provide me with a prompt and I'm going to figure out a way to make it work, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of prompts, what we're going to be doing mostly here is exactly those kinds of prompts and opportunities in the game. We are going to be presenting ourselves with prompts. We got a bunch of prompts from people on TikTok and Discord for ideas for what, you know, little ideas they might like to see in the game vague enough that the two of us can take that idea and come up with two entirely different things as a result. And it should be a really fun creative exercise to see what we can come up with, help each other develop those ideas into something real. But we'll find out. We'll find out.
For more context, we're going to give each other a week to work on these prompts. We, full disclosure, already have rolled for and come up with our first prompt, so we could have one ready for the first episode here.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that in a second. But this is a homebrew showdown, for lack of better title.
Indeed.
Better title coming later.
And it doesn't need to be competitive or anything. You know, I don't think we're trying to one-up each other's ideas. I really think we're just trying surprise each other. And the prompt, I think, is going to trigger different things in each of our brains.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things in the game that brings me the most joy is when two people take the same idea. It amazes me how far apart the finished products can be with the same starting point.
Yeah.
And that's the idea going into this series. Remind the listeners, Dan,
yes,
what was our first prompt?
So we rolled off audio a while back to see what our first idea was going to be. And we rolled from Wayward Enigma Designs on TikTok a suggestion.
Thanks, man.
For a magic absorbing sorcerer subclass. That was the entirety of the prompt. It was very simple, mm-hmm. very clean, and we're going to find out what we came up with it. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I would love to go first. I would love to go first. Going into this prompt, I was super excited, both because I really enjoy making subclasses. It's more my niche than anything else, and you and I are both kind of lukewarm on sorcerers. It's a thing that we've spoken about at length, about how they are kind of just the odd child out in the arcane magic users. They don't really have any spells that they have to themselves. They don't have much of a mechanic that they have to themselves now that metamagic adept is a feat, and coming into the new wizard upcoming this year, they can do a lot of sorcerer-esque things. So sorcerers always feel like they're a little bit left out. They don't prepare spells, so they're limited in that regard too. And that is kind of the essence that I wanted to carry into this sorcerer that I made. So I try to think outside of anything that exists already in the sorcerer class. I came up with plants. There really is nothing. There's nothing in the sorcerer class or any of the subclasses that lends itself to natural magic, use of plants, use of the sun. So I present to you, Dan, my energy absorbing sorcerer, the photosynthetic soul. This is a sorcerer that draws all of their magic from the light of the sun, or light of the sun reflected off the moon if you operate at night. They are only granted one spell per level on their spell list.
Okay.
That's to balance out. But the main crux of their class is they are constitution-based instead of charisma-based. That's stipulated at the beginning of the write-up, and that kind of lends itself to anything that they can do later on. So at first level, they already know the transmuted spell metamagic option, and it doesn't count against the number of metamagic options they can learn. Radiant damage is added to the list of damage types available, and if they cast a cantrip, it can be radiant damage for free. Channeling that sun energy, as long as they aren't incapacitated at level 6, they emanate an aura that extends out 10 feet. All plants within that aura are immune to spells or effects that negatively target you, such as blight or wither and bloom. At 14th level, your creature type becomes plant, so you then are immune to those spells as well.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so it kind of, I really tried to, Yeah,
I love it.
Just like poison ivy type thing.
That's
I really tried to build with each thing.
Okay.
Essentially, the absorption comes from different plants. So you can walk past plants and kind of use them to power your abilities. If it's sunny out, if you're in direct sunlight, you can use hit dice when you're not using a short rest to regain health. And then at 18th level, you send out a radiant surge out 30 feet, and you roll a number of d8s equal to your sorcerer level. So this is at 18, level 18. So it's going to be a pretty significant number. And any creature within that 30-foot radius can be affected in one of two ways. You can nurture them. So you can use that pool of d8s that result to heal hit points or deal radiant damage.
Can you do both? Can you do a little bit of healing and bit of damage as long as you've got like an enemy and an ally? Okay, that's
and you can separate it as much as divide it up whatever way you want.
That's pretty fun. I like the lean into radiant damage. This interplay of plants and sunlight is very fun, I think, as the like magic or the energy being absorbed here. It also feels like so different from anything, I'll be honest. It feels like, I almost thought, oh, it kind of feels like a druid, but it doesn't really have like druidy vibes too hard. Like, it's not leaning too hard into that. It's also not leaning too hard into any like other nature based subclass, nature cleric or anything like that. Like, it feels distinctly different from those as well.
As the sorcerer deserves.
They
need something for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, they do deserve a little love, you know? They really do. Mm-hmm.
I also included some meta magic. I didn't know some additional meta magic options.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how far you wanted to go with yours, but I think that these were kind of symbiotic to how this subclass worked. So I have three of them. The first one is called Enriching Spell. When you cast a spell while standing within 5 feet of a willing creature, you can spend a sorcery point to give that creature temporary hit points equal to twice the spell's level. Very simple, but it's a way to like deal some damage and heal a little bit. I mean, with temp hit points, but a little bolster here and there.
Yeah, a way to make a sorcerer have a little additional support quality.
With
whatever else they got.
Yeah,
very cool.
The second one is called Germinating Spell. It's when you cast a spell that utilizes an AoE. You can spend a number of sorcery points equal to half of the spell's level, rounded up, to create a second area of effect adjacent to the original area. And I thought that felt kind of strong, so I added this stipulation that the secondary area occupies half of the space of the original. So it has to be adjacent, so it has to be right up against the first area of effect, and it's half as big. So you can have one giant circle and then a tiny little circle next to it, just to give you a little bit more functionality on the battlefield.
And that's
rounded down to the next 5 foot increment too.
Oh yeah.
So you don't have to math super hard when you're doing it.
I like this one a lot. And full disclosure, you did tell me about this one before, and I love it so much. I do think it maybe needs some adjustment for balance or something like that, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Exactly what
Absolutely.
It is, or a way to do it in a different way. So I've actually been playing around with this and being like, what would be a fun way to mess with this? Like, could it be?
I know there's something there.
I think this one has a lot of potential for just like the kind of thing that I would add into any sorcerer and just be like, hey, if you're playing a sorcerer in my game, these are house meta magic options that you can also take. Here's one.
Maybe you just get two areas of effect and they're both cut in half. Maybe that's the way to balance it.
Maybe.
So you can spend, maybe you spend sorcery points and you cut it in half, but you get two of them.
Oh,
and you can pop two of them up within range.
Yeah. So tell me about the last one. What's the last one?
And the last one, I called it Seated Spell. When you cast a spell with a range other than touch or self and a casting time of either one action or a bonus action, you can spend two sorcery points to burrow the spell just below the surface of the ground. And it automatically triggers at the beginning of your next turn. So it's just like a time release spell, essentially. So taking the concept of delayed blast fireball and applying it to Firebolt or something, yeah, you know?
That's a fun little way to potentially, like, set a trap.
Yeah.
Or, you know, set up something that, like, allows you a little extra time to run, whatever else could be really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, overall, thanks, I think, man. This subclass is super fun, super unique. I would never have thought to do this, which is the thing that I love about this. I would never have thought.
That's the point of the whole thing.
To go,
yeah,
from magic absorption and go down the, like, the word association to absorbing sunlight. I think that's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well.
All right, man. Let's see yours.
Okay. I'll tell you about mine. So mine is entirely different.
I'm ready.
Went with a different mechanic that sort of fuels all of the features of this particular sorcerer subclass. So I give you the sorcerer's origin, the arcane reclaimant. And the idea behind this subclass is thinking about the lore of the weave or whatever other magic system you want to use. When you cast a spell, you're pulling on an external force, right? And even for sorcerers, that external force of magic is somewhat internal, which I think allows a sorcerer to perhaps have a little bit more flexibility. So when you cast a spell, there is sort of this residual magic, you know? It gives off this aura that people can see with detect magic and things like that. So what would be interesting is a sorcerer who can use that residual magic. If using magic and casting through the weave is a necessarily entropic process, there will always be these, like, residual things that are being distributed around, and a sorcerer who can grab those and still use them would be really interesting. So we start with an expanded spell list that relies somewhat on disrupting and undoing magic, things like absorb elements, dispel magic, dispel evil and good, but also relying on, to some degree, the ability to just be able to sense and manipulate that residual magic. So detect magic is in there. Magic aura is in there. Basically set up this idea that not only is this person good at sort of undoing and tearing apart magic, but also of just, like, recognizing and seeing, like, residual sort of, like, low level, just that general umbra that is always going on in a high fantasy world, right? That sense that, like, everything has a little bit of a crackle of magic, and this particular subclass is very well attuned to those things.
This is really cool.
The core idea functions on this fragment of power. So at first level, you gain the ability to harness ambient magic from the spells that you cast. So when you cast a sorcerer spell, you can use the residual magic to summon a translucent fragment of magical power that hovers around you for 1 minute. So this fragment starts with only having the ability to reduce the cost of sorcery point use by one, but you start to gain the ability to summon more of them as you increase in level. You can have 2 at 7th level, 3 at 11th level, and 4 at 15th level. And as you get further on at 6th level, you can trap your own magic and you can trap incoming magic. So when you are targeted by a spell effect, you can attempt to grab some of the residual magic from that as well to summon a fragment of power. At 14th level, when you have a fragment of power going, when you have some of this residual magic captured, you can use them to redirect harmful spells away from you. A spell attack that misses you or a harmful spell that you succeed on a saving throw against, you can use your reaction to dismiss a fragment and redirect the triggering spell at a different creature.
We like that a lot.
Very fun stuff. And then finally, so overall it's a pretty simple mechanic that I actually feel like I would want to revisit and expand on a little bit, because I think that I would want to create more ways for you to use these fragments in unique and interesting ways. One could potentially overcharge spells and try and cast at a higher level using fragments of power, and things like that.
This is great. I think this is one of those subclasses, or, you know, homebrew in general, that can kind of evolve naturally. The more you kind of think about it, or the more you just play the game in general, something will come up and you're like, oh, that could be a use for one of my shards. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something that I'm going to write down and put into this. It feels really good. It feels very intentional. I think it builds really well. It could almost have like its own inclusive like invocation system,
yeah,
almost like a list of things like the warlock just for this subclass that you can use these for, that players can pick from, so they don't have to have everything. They can kind of choose a la carte, and that's there are not enough subclasses like this, I think, that can be open to use how a player wants. And I think the sorcerer lends itself to that style of play, just in how it is now. There aren't enough tools in the toolbox to actually let players expand all the way into that.
It feels like the core sort of idea behind a sorcerer is flexibility in spell casting, right, and flexibility in the use of magic. And it does feel like, you know, metamagic is a good exploration of that, but it does feel like there are more ways that it could be more so. I've seen versions of like overcharge homebrew concepts, and I think they're all really cool. So that's the kind of thing that I could build into this, because I think that really fits super well into the concept of a sorcerer. Is, you know, a wizard might not be able to push their spells beyond their physical limits, but a sorcerer should be able to. Like,
absolutely,
by all rights, a sorcerer should be able to push their spell casting using their physical vitality. Mm-hmm. So I think it's got a way to go, but I think there's potential here.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the inverse of mine, where mine has a lot going on and needs to be edited down, and yours has holes that can be filled to keep it increasing.
Yeah.
I would love to revisit both of these in
two very different concepts. Let's come back to it in a little while. We can sort of revisit and see if there's new ideas we want to come up with. I'm ready to keep going. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to make something else.
In the meantime, let's roll for something new. I rolled for the sorcerer. So would you like to roll for our next
one? Let me roll for our next one. Okay, that is a 6.
All right. With a 6, we are looking at from @DJK18 on TikTok. Thank you so much for your submission. This is going to be another subclass. We are looking at a hit point siphoning barbarian. So a barbarian that sucks up HP.
HP siphoning barbarian subclass. Okay. All right. I have no idea where I'm going to go with that.
I don't either.
This will be typically don't. One.
Yeah, I always struggle with martial classes more than casting classes for whatever reason. So this will be fun. This will be a good stretch
good
for
challenge,
my brain.
Good
I
challenge.
Think.
Yes. Indeed.
Yeah. Exactly.
Indeed. We'll go ahead and start to let the wheels turn and let that one marinate, and we will return with our creations next week. In the meantime, if anybody has something that you had a thought about with the sorcerer subclass, these magic absorbing sorcerers, we'd love to hear about it. You can find me on TikTok at Sir Dr. K.
You can find me on TikTok at Michael_Barlos. Please drop us a message, drop us some comments on our posts. If you have any prompts that you'd love to see added to our list and rolled for, that would be wonderful to hear from some new listeners.
I'm excited to see what your barbarian looks like.
I'm excited to see what my barbarian looks like.
Until then, this has been the College of Creation. Do you have a good sign-off, Michael?
You know, until we speak with you guys again, please take care of yourselves, and you have a great day.
Good enough. Bye. Hey, y'all. Dan here. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of College of Creation. We had such a great time making this. If you want to check out these sorcerer subclasses, you can access them for free at our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. We're going to be putting all of our first draft creations for these episodes up there for free the same day that episodes drop. And if you want to support us over there, we would really appreciate that too. Patrons will get access to any future revisions to these creations, plus exclusive content and our community Discord. So come on, check it out. We would love to have you. Thanks again for listening, and we will be back Monday, April 22.